Spring has not yet sprung. That means there's still time to take care of a few late winter chores in the garden while we prepare for the growing season. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Horticulturists Richard Duran and Cindy Haynes will be here. We'll talk about late winter chores like pruning your raspberries and grapevines, cutting back dead asparagus debris, and we'll also talk about some early spring chores like potting up tender perennials indoors and planning out your vegetable garden. Richard and Cindy will also answer your questions about the plants in your life. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we're going to talk about some late winter chores you still have time to do and some early spring chores that it's time for you to do. But before we get started today, I want to take just a moment to say thank you to you. We wrapped up our spring membership drive this morning at 9 o'clock. We heard from over 4,000 members of Iowa Public Radio during the last week. A tremendous success. Thank you so much if you were a part of this drive. Thank you so much if you are a member of Iowa Public Radio. We say it a lot during the drive, but we really can't do what we do here without you. So thank you so much. And now I want to introduce Richard Duran from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. Hello, Richard. Richard, are you there?
Good morning.
Hi. And Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, good morning.
Welcome back to the show. And I think all of us are just itching for spring, but it's not quite here yet.
No, but we're all looking for something to do.
Exactly. So let's talk about some of the late winter chores that maybe we haven't gotten done yet, but we can still do. And one of those is pruning. What can we still get out there and prune?
Well, you should prune things like your shade trees, like your oaks, excuse me, your maples, your lindens, your ash, your honey locust. Also, some of your ornamental trees like crab apples and service berries and hawthorns.
And you almost said oaks, but it's too late for oaks, right?
Well, because of the weather, I think if you were to do that maybe this weekend, that might be okay. It's been so cold with the snow cover, I don't think the sap beetles are active at this point, but it would have to be done, I think, this weekend.
Okay.
If you were to do it.
And I would guess not in parts of the state where there hasn't been snow cover.
Right. In southwest Iowa, it might get into the 60s today, so maybe not so much in southwest Iowa.
All right. And what about grapevines and raspberries?
Right.
Is there still time for that?
Grapevines, raspberries, your currants, your gooseberries, your blueberries. So basically any small or tree fruit you can still prune.
All right. And we get a lot of questions about raspberries. How do we prune raspberries?
Well, it depends upon the type. And we have different types. We have red raspberries. We have black raspberries. We have purple. Let's say you have a summer-bearing red raspberry, which produces a single crop in midsummer. You would go out basically the next 2 or 3 weeks and simply select what you believe are the biggest, most vigorous canes. Leave those and prune out the very weak, spindly canes off at the ground. So get rid of the small ones because they're not going to produce anything anyway. Just keep the big, fat, vigorous canes.
All right. The small ones will just create a tangle of thorns that
right,
you have to get through.
And not produce much. And with the bigger canes, also cut back any dieback at the very tips of the canes. You typically have some dieback at the tip because of winter injury, and prune that off, and you're basically done. Now, if you have a fall-bearing red raspberry, like Heritage, you basically have two options. One option is to simply go out there in the next 2 or 3 weeks and prune them back to the ground. And if you do that, they produce just a single crop, basically in late summer, early fall. But it actually is very productive that way. The other way is to simply go out there again and simply select the bigger canes, leave those, and prune out the very small spindly canes.
Okay. And when we were exchanging email about this, you also mentioned that it's time to clean up the asparagus bed. What do you need to do there?
Well, basically, if you've left that dead debris, at some point in the next 2 or 3 weeks, go out there and simply cut it off at the ground with like a pruning shears, remove the debris from the area and destroy it, and you're basically all set.
All right. We inherited an asparagus bed in our ditch, of all places. So we don't get out there as much as we should, I'm afraid. So we do need to do some cleaning up out there. And there, it's already time to do some more fun stuff, too. We talked last week about starting seeds. There are still some seeds that you could start. But there are other things that you can start doing that get your hands dirty inside. What are some of the other things?
Absolutely. You can start some of the tender perennials, things like tuberous begonias, caladiums, dahlias. You typically want to start those inside maybe 4 to 6 weeks before they planted outside so they get a head start. Otherwise, they won't start blooming until later in the season. So just pot them up indoors in potting soil. With the tuberous begonias, for example, you have this disc-like tuber, and the rounded side is the bottom, and the indented side is the top. And when you go ahead and plant those about an inch deep, and they should sprout within maybe 2 or 3 weeks. And once they do, just put them in a sunny window, under artificial lighting, and then bring them outside sometime in late April, early May.
All right. We could also get some flowers going inside this time of year as well, if we wanted to make it seem a little springier inside, by forcing some branches, right?
Absolutely. We can force things like forsythia. They force very easily. Pussy willow. So in fact, if they need some pruning in the next 2 or 3 weeks, take some of that pruning material that you remove from the plant and cut it up and bring it inside, put it in a vase. Put it in a cool location where the temperature may be around 60, 65, bright light. Change the water at least every other day. And typically within a week or two, they'll start to bloom.
That sounds like a great project to do with kids this time of year.
It's easy, especially with pussy willow and forsythia. Some of the other plants like crab apples and magnolia, they're more challenging, but you can do it. But pussy willow, forsythia, anybody can do it.
All right. I would want to do the easy ones, I think, especially if I'm involving kids and their their hopes and desires. Don't want disappointment. And it's also a great time to start planning out your vegetable garden on paper, too, right?
Right. Because within a few weeks, we should be outside planting things. And I guess the first thing to keep in mind is, as far as planting things, that you want to rotate, that you want to place things in a different location this year. So where you had your tomatoes last year, you want to plant maybe some beans or maybe some carrots or beets, something in a different plant family. Not tomatoes, not potatoes, not peppers, because they're in the same plant family and they potentially could get the same diseases. So you want to rotate as best you can. So kind of have an idea what you had last year and then kind of plan accordingly for this year.
Richard, do you plan your garden out on paper?
Not really, because I don't have a very big garden. But I have certain things in mind that I want to plant. And so it's in my mind, basically. Now, we do have some demonstration gardens in the state, and we definitely do plan those. They're already kind of planned. We have them on paper. And so they're kind of set for this spring.
All right. And how about you, Cindy? Do you sit down and with a pad of paper and plan out your garden?
Well, I do. Sometimes we, you know, Jackson helps me with the garden because he likes to plant things as well.
And that's your son. How old is Jackson now?
He is 5. So we go to the garden center, we pick out some seed, and then we kind of map something out a little bit, and then we do it. So sometimes according to plan, sometimes a little bit not according to plan. So, but yeah, we do try and kind of map a few things out, and I try and offer some input, but he's 5 and he thinks he knows everything. So we usually have a Jackson garden at the house.
Oh, really? So you have 2 separate gardens, or do you just devote your entire garden to him?
But for at home, it's a really small vegetable garden. So yeah, he usually starts a little bit, and he has ideas on where things are going to be, and it becomes Jackson's garden.
All right. And I'm sure he's very good at rotating the location of the tomatoes, right?
Yes, he is very good at thinking about any of those things. He does that. Or I try to get him to, so we'll see.
All right. As you're planning your garden this spring, you can join us with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And, you know, there are so many different ways to plant a garden. And I think, at least in my family, we tend to get kind of stuck in a rut and we do things in the same kind of rows all the mm-hmm. time. Do you have any suggestions for places to go to get new ideas?
Well, there are some books, I guess, that you could look for. There's Square Foot Gardening. Mm-hmm. So that's a possibility. We also have publications at Iowa State that you can look at. And they discuss some space-saving techniques, like companion planting and things like that. So that's another option.
Or you can get a little wild and crazy, and you can think about the ornamental vegetable garden and think about some of those vegetables as ornamentals and find new places for them. Like beets are really pretty, and why can't they go in the front yard? Or Swiss chard. And then there's even people I know that are into quilting that will actually do quilt blocks with their different types of vegetables or flowers in their garden.
I've seen a lot of really fun ideas popping mm-hmm. up on Facebook and mm-hmm. Pinterest garden
Pinterest.
Ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it seems like there are not necessarily more great ideas out there, but with social media, we certainly are getting to see a lot more of these ideas.
Right. And you can try these, you know, they might be a little bit different. You can try them in a small scale. Some of these can even be done in like containers, larger containers. Or in just devote it to one space and see how it goes this year. Kind of do a trial run if you want.
All right. Well, let's jump to the phones here. 866-780-9100. Dale's on the line in Pella. Hi, Dale.
Hi. I have a front yard where I have tried to plant an ornamental pear tree, and it was a wet year. The tree did not live. I think it's because I had a lot of clay just below the surface, and I dug a saucer, and it sort of drowned in that.
Okay.
I'm wondering if I could try a saucer magnolia in the front yard in an area that is not protected.
Well, it should be hardy in your area. Now, when you plant in a clay soil, it's important not to plant too deep. And so the first thing I would do is if you buy a tree, go out with a yardstick and measure the height of the soil ball. And then dig a hole that is about two-thirds the height of the actual soil ball. Also measure the width, and then dig a hole that's three times the width of the soil ball. And then plant that tree. It's going to be a little bit high, but that's what you want in a clay-type soil. And the reason that you dig that wide hole is that you basically will loosen the soil, and so for a year or two, that tree will have some loose soil around it so the roots can grow more easily into the surrounding soil.
All right, Dale, thank you so much for your call. We're going to take a short break, and we will be back to answer more of your questions at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, horticulturists Richard Duran and Cindy Haynes. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Richard Duran from Iowa State University Extension and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. They are here to answer your questions as you're planning out your garden, taking care of some late winter chores, or just dreaming of spring. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Leo is on the line from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Leo.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
My only suggestion concerning maple trees is, from everything I understand, that they should only be pruned in midsummer because they'll leak sap now if you prune them.
Right. There are certain trees like maples and birches that will bleed very heavily when you prune them in late winter, early spring. And some people are concerned about that, but actually it doesn't harm them that much. It's perfectly fine. They're not going to bleed to death. But if you had one, let's say, over a patio, you may not want that dripping sap on the patio, so you could do it like in midsummer.
Okay, and they're a tree that if you prune them in midsummer, they're going to be okay with that.
Right, right. Typically, you don't want to prune trees in the spring as they're leafing out. So like in maybe late April or May, and you don't want to do it in the fall when they're shedding their foliage. Most of the rest of the year is perfectly fine.
All right. We have an email question from Mary Kay. She says, in the fall, we put a lot of leaves on our garden. Can we till those in or do we need to get them out of there?
You can definitely till those in. Just go ahead when it's dry enough and till them in. Try to work them into the upper, let's say, 8-10 inches of soil, and they're good organic matter. So no problem there.
All right. Back to the phones at 866-780-9100. Bill is on the line. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I had a question about rabbit damage over the winter. I went out and surveyed the backyard, and the rabbits have stripped the bark of my burning bushes. And I'm just wondering if there's any hope for them, or do they have to come out?
Well, basically, if they have eaten the bark down to the wood, and if they've gone all the way around major branches, the areas beyond that point will basically die. And so I don't think they'll probably destroy the entire shrub. Even if they did that to every single branch, I think it's likely they would send up new shoots or suckers from the base of the actual plant. So the damage would be severe, but I think in time they might eventually recover. But if you have branches, and if those branches are basically girdled, then essentially they're going to die anyway, so I would prune those out at this point.
Go ahead and prune those out.
Yeah.
Okay.
And have they eaten all the way around? Can you tell, Bill?
It appears that they went all the way around. They must have been hungry rabbits this year.
Well, the burning bush or winged euonymus is one of their favorite winter foods.
They're delicious.
They love it.
great.
So that plant, apples and crab apples, those are on the top of their list. And so in the future, I would probably get some chicken wire fencing or hardware cloth and put that around those in the fall of the year, like in October. Because if there's rabbits and if we have a lot of snow cover, then food is scarce, and they find those things very appetizing.
All right, Bill, thank you so much for your call. And next, let's go to Sally on the line in Coralville. Hi, Sally.
Hi. My question is, I planted quite a few shrub roses last year, mm-hmm. and they really took off. They were beautiful, and they bloomed a lot, but they are looking very gangly. I was mm-hmm. told I didn't really have to prune shrub roses, but I'm concerned they're quite large, and I wondered if I could prune them without killing the plant.
And you can. And you can prune some shrub roses. Shrub roses are usually nice because they have a certain size or maturity that they reach, and they kind of maintain that. But this is actually a pretty good time if you want to do a little tip pruning, or you want to do a little thinning or cutting back to make it maybe a little bit more full in the spring and grow pretty well in the summer. You can do that, and they should be fine. I would not prune these back like a typical hybrid tea rose, where
okay.
we often prune them way back. You know, I would kind of just do a little bit of tip pruning, one, because they're just recently have gotten established, and they are shrub roses that are going to kind of reach this kind of size or height every year.
Oh, okay, because they're about 3 to 4 feet tall,
mm-hmm.
and so, they got that tall in 1 year, so...
Yeah.
But that's what they do, huh?
That's kind of what they do. Most shrub roses you're looking at, well, most of the shrub roses that are sold, somewhere but usually under 6 feet. So
okay.
don't worry about them getting 15 feet tall. But if you want to keep them at that 3 to 4 foot height, you might go out there now, do a little bit of pruning, a little bit of thinning so that it
okay.
stays nice and full. But once again, don't take off more than maybe 25%, 25-30%, and you should be good for the year.
Oh, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. All right, Sally, thank you so much for your call.
Yes, bye-bye.
Bye. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Joe is on the line next from Mount Auburn. Hi, Joe.
Yes, I'd like to know what variety of black raspberries that would survive the winter in Iowa. My understanding is a thornless will not survive.
Okay. These are black raspberries or blackberries?
Raspberries.
Black raspberries
are growing. They grow. They survive. But the thornless will not survive, so I'd like to have a black raspberry.
My suggestion would be Black Hawk.
Black Hawk?
Right. That was actually introduced by Iowa State University. It's considered the hardiest black raspberry cultivar. And we can typically grow that about as far north as U.S. Highway 20. Beyond that, it's kind of iffy, but the rest of Iowa should be okay. The black raspberries aren't as hardy as the red or the purple.
Yes, I have both of those. I have like 2 acres.
Okay.
Cool. All right, Joe, thanks a lot for your call, and good luck with that one. Jeff's on the line next in Fayette. Hi, Jeff.
Hi there.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I have a pine tree in my backyard that's probably 45 to 50 feet tall, great big old pine. And in the fall, I noticed that the top of it was browning up real bad. And looking closer, found that the bark was split in a lot of places around the tree. And when I would pull it back, there was lots of earwigs in it. And now it seems that the tree has died altogether. And I'm wondering if maybe the earwigs had something to do with that, or what would cause a tree to die in such a way that the bark would split like it did.
Well, I think those are probably secondary, in that something else actually killed the tree. And once you have a dead tree or branch, then you tend to have secondary insects and fungi invade the dead tissue. And so I'm thinking they're secondary in nature. As far as what killed the tree, you may never know. I will say the last 4 or 5 years have been very difficult weather-wise, because we had the very wet years in 2008, 2009, 2010.
Uh-huh.
And then last year we had the very hot, dry year. So they've had very unusual weather. And whenever you have that type of situation, that puts stress on the tree, and the weather may have been the biggest factor. So do you know what kind of tree it is, actually, as far as the species?
I don't.
Okay.
I know it's a short-needled tree, so it's, you know, it's not like a spruce or something that has the longer, softer needles. I don't know the specific.
Okay. Well, it could be a spruce. They tend to have shorter needles. The pines tend to have longer needles.
Okay.
If it were, for example, a Austrian pine, I would think disease-wise it may be Dothostroma, Diplodia, possibly pine wilt. If it were a spruce, a Colorado spruce, I would think maybe it could be Cytospora canker, possibly Rhizosphere needle cast. So there are a number of things that we would expect to see on certain trees. But once a tree dies, it's oftentimes very hard to actually diagnose it, because if it was a disease, once the tree dies, that pathogen disappears very quickly. So you can't really ID it very well.
That was going to be my next question,
yeah.
If there's anything that can be done to figure out exactly what happened so that we can have it not happen to the others.
Probably
it's a shame
not.
To see, because that's just a grand old tree. So I guess I'd just take it down and start
right,
again.
Right. If the tree is dead, I would take it down. You can chip it up. You should be able to use it as far as the chips, as a wood mulch. So that should be no problem. But I would take it down and basically chip it up.
All right. Well, thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Jeff. And Pat is on the line next from Davenport. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I have a lovely little chive patch, and I was wondering how can that be preserved for cooking later in the year?
It's easy. Chives are pretty easy. You just let them grow, and then you can harvest off of them throughout the year, and they're vigorous enough to kind of regrow straight from it, so not a problem.
Can they be dried to use in the winter?
Yeah, they can. You can actually dry some of those. Most people dry them after they've kind of chopped them up, and then you dry them and put them in little containers just like you do other herbs.
Great.
Yeah, so you could have a lot of them. It's probably not. It's one of the better herbs to have fresh than it is dried, but but you can certainly. My guess is if you have a chive patch, you're going to have a lot, and you can do a little bit of both. So you can have some fresh and then preserve some and have some dried too. You can even grow this one in a container and bring it indoors and have fresh in the winter.
So year-round, it'll grow year-round?
It will. It will do better outside because it's getting more sunlight and better drainage. But if you really have to have those chives on your potatoes, you can have some in a little container and bring it indoors.
You're following my thoughts.
Mm-hmm. and Pat, you had another question today?
Well, I did. I have a lavender plant.
Mm-hmm.
It's in a it gets the late sun. Is that a good idea?
Yeah, with lavender, this is a marginal perennial in parts of Iowa, so you want to make sure it's in a place where it gets plenty of sun, as much sun as you can give it, and that afternoon sun is the best, and it needs to have a really well-drained soil, so really good well-drained soils. And then if you can protect it a little bit from that northwest winter wind, because sometimes when we get a really severe cold winter, it may not make it, so... It needs a little bit of a microclimate that's sunny, warm, and dry.
All right, Pat, thank you so much for your call. You're listening to Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. Richard Geron and Cindy Haynes here with me. And we've got a couple of lines open right now for your call at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Sue is on the line next from Traer. Hi, Sue.
Hi there.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I have a forsythia bush that needs to be cut back, and as I understand it, you usually do that after it's bloomed.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, during the winter, I had the top of a blue spruce fall on those bushes.
Okay.
And that's got to be cut down.
Okay.
Because it's still attached to the tree.
Okay.
I want to have that trimmed as soon as the snow is gone.
Okay. You can do that.
To do the least damage to the yard.
Okay.
But can I have them cut the forsythia bushes, trim them back at the same time? That would probably be prior to them blooming.
Right. Well, you can definitely. As far as the health of the plant is concerned, that's fine. It's just the fact they won't bloom much in April. But that's
okay.
Fine. They'll be fine, perfectly fine. So
okay.
Health-wise, okay. They just won't bloom much this spring.
All right. Good. Thank you very much.
All right, Sue, thank you for your call. And next up, we've got Rachel on the line. Oh, we don't have Rachel yet on the line. We will get to her call here in just a second. And you're welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Again, you can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we got this email from David in Cedar Rapids, and he said, I thought your listeners might want to know about two great programs offered in eastern Iowa. Mid-American Energy has a Plant Some Shade program where homeowners can get two shade trees for $30 each, pick up dates in mid-April in Lynn and Johnson counties. And the City of North Liberty has a program where we can get rain barrels and compost bins at a discount. And a lot of communities all mm-hmm. over the state are doing this mm-hmm. this time of year. Mm-hmm. It's a really good time of year to look out for stuff like that, right?
Right, because trees and rain barrels are not inexpensive. So if they have a nice price,
jump
on it.
And they usually have nice species as well. So it's a nice kind of way to add some diversity into your landscape. And the rain barrels might be really helpful if we have another dry year.
All right, Rachel's on the line from Iowa City. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What's your question?
So I have a jasmine plant. Last year I had several jasmine plants, and I took them outside during the summer, and they all died. So this is a new jasmine plant. And also I have some philodendrons. If I put them outside during the summer, I mean, can I keep them inside even though it's summer? Are they still going to grow the same they would outside or well enough?
They will grow well indoors. You need to make sure that it's in a sunny window. If you take houseplants like jasmine or philodendron and other things outside for the summer, you really need to put them in kind of a shady location because there is a big difference in the sun that you would have even in a sunny window indoors and on the patio with full sun outside. And sometimes it's just too much. It's too much of an extreme. And it may overload the system, and that may be why it dies. And they dry out a lot faster when they go outside. So if you decide to take them outside, put them in kind of a shady location that maybe isn't getting a lot of direct light, and so you can still enjoy it on your patio, and then bring it in once again in the fall before it actually starts to freeze, and put it indoors in a sunny window. Does that make sense?
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, okay. Rachel. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we have Susan on the line in Waukee. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I have a question kind of following up the previous caller with a large pine tree that died.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Austrian pines. Unfortunately, 20 years ago, we planted about 5 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now one of them is beginning to die from the top. We have been treating them for the fungus and things, and occasionally for that moth that burrows in, and they bleed a lot. At any rate, what tree do you recommend, the evergreen, that does best in Iowa as I look to replace these trees?
We only have a few things that really do well in Iowa, unfortunately. The list is quite small. The ones that I would suggest are the white pine, which is actually native to Iowa, the Norway spruce, okay, very common in Iowa, in windbreaks and landscapes, and also the concolor fir or white fir. Very pretty tree.
All right, Susan, thank you so much for your call. We have to take a short break. We'll be back to answer more of your questions. And we do still have a couple lines open, so it's a great time to get on the line with your question at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post your question on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. With me, Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension and Cindy Haynes of Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension. And you are welcome to join the conversation with your question at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Judy is on the road today. Hi, Judy. What's your question?
Well, my question is, brand or what kind of a daisy? I've tried for years to get these beautiful clumps of daisies that I see in other people's yards. Mm-hmm. Started last year, I planted Shasta daisies, and they never come up the next year.
Hmm. There's a Shasta daisy called Becky. That's a very
what?
There's a Shasta daisy called Becky. It's a cultivar called Becky. That's really popular. It does pretty well in full sun and well-drained soils. It is a little bit later in emerging than other daisies or other Shasta daisies that are out there and a little bit later to bloom, but it's one that everyone really likes because it blooms for about 10 to 12 weeks continuously in the summer. So if I were to start over, it's a pretty tough and durable one. I would look for Becky Shasta daisy, and if you've got that sunny, well-drained site, I would give it another try.
And are daisies finicky?
Not usually. Most Shasta daisies are pretty durable. We also think of coneflowers as being daisies and asters as being daisies. So most of these are pretty adaptable if, like I said, they're getting full sun and a good well-drained soil. They don't like it wet, and they usually get really leggy and floppy if they're getting too much shade.
All right, Judy, thanks a lot for your call. And since you mentioned purple coneflowers, let's go to Stephanie on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I've had some challenges trying to grow purple coneflowers, mm-hmm. despite the fact that I've read and heard how easy they are to grow.
Right.
I've had multiple plants, and it seems like at some point in their lifespan, they start producing green flowers.
Right. Yeah,
I've kind of read about that on the internet. Mm-hmm. I went to the gardening fair recently at Kirkwood. Nobody could really come up with a solid answer there, and they actually suggested that I talk to you all. So do I need to destroy the plant? What is that?
It sounds like aster yellows.
Well, that's the question.
Or mites. Mm-hmm.
And that's the key thing. It could be either one of those two because the symptoms are very similar.
Okay.
Aster yellows is a disease, and it's caused by a phytoplasma, which is a very unique organism. But once they have it, they have it. You can't cure it, and you basically would dig up and destroy the plant.
Okay.
But there's a very small little mite that can do the very same thing. Mm. But the might is something that may not be present the following year. So you wouldn't have to destroy the plant.
Ah.
But the might is, I think, microscopic, that you really can't see it with your naked eye. So it's really, really hard to tell.
Okay.
And so one suggestion is to maybe, if this happens, maybe remove all those affected flowers, kind of deadhead them, and see if they bloom again. And if they do, are the flowers the very same way?
Okay.
If it were a mite, they might be okay that second time, as far as the second bloom. And so you would say, okay, if the second bloom is okay, it must have been the mites. I'll keep the plant.
If
they come back a second time and bloom and they have the very same deformed green flower heads, then you might think, well, it's more likely it's a disease. I should dig up and destroy the plants. That's kind of the thinking on that.
And does it work? It just seems like it's happened. And it's not that the flower is, I've read about the aster yellow, and it's not that the flower is deformed necessarily. It's just the petals are green.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it kind of looks like a coneflower, but it's not remotely the right color. And it's happening in multiple locations. And so if I was doing something wrong, or is there something about the soil, or you know what I mean? Preventing
if it's
anything?
If it's a mite or aster yellows, you're not doing anything wrong. And that's how the kind of deformed flower happens with aster yellows. It's kind of a greenish petal, and it's fewer of them. They're not kind of twisted or anything. It's just that it's this really huge head or center and a few kind of green petals that kind of come out from the flower itself. So there's really nothing you're doing wrong. It's just that this plant is kind of prevalent to this, and it may require that you remove them, or it may just be the mite, and you can keep them. And there's a lot of really good, wonderful coneflowers out there. So you might try them in a new place if you want to continue to try them, or you might just kind of wait a year, see what happens this year, see if it's the mite or the aster yellows, and then kind of make your decision to move forward with coneflowers after that.
All right, Stephanie, thanks a lot for your call. And next up is Barb in Davenport. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Charity.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I would like to talk about strawberries, and I want to start some in my strawberry planter jar, you know, that has, like, the series of holes that go down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what variety is better for that.
Well, in containers, I would not plant the typical June-bearing strawberry. I would plant a day-neutral strawberry.
Okay.
Something like Seascape, Albion, Tribute, or TriStar. Those are day-neutral strawberries.
Okay.
And they will flower and produce fruit much of the summer if it's not too hot. If it gets hot, they stop flowering and producing fruit. But if we had some nice, favorable weather, they could fruit much of the summer. The other thing is they tend not to run. And if you put them in a container, if the plants do form runners, you want to cut them off or pinch them off and just keep them as single mature plants. Don't let them run.
Okay.
And that way you get your best production. Make sure they have plenty of water. They're in a container. And make sure they get 6 hours of sun. But potentially they could bear fruit much of the summer.
Okay, now, is this like an ever-bearer? I was looking in some catalogs.
Right. These are considered, day-neutral strawberries are considered to be improved ever-bearing strawberries.
Okay.
The old-fashioned ever-bearers are things like Fort Laramie, Ogallala. Those are the old-fashioned ones. And those would produce about twice a year, basically in June and maybe in August. But these day-neutral varieties potentially could fruit June, July, August, September if the weather's favorable. And so they're considered to be improvements on the old-fashioned ever-bearing strawberries.
All right, Barb, thanks a lot for your call, and good luck. Next up, Bob is on the line in Muscatine. Hi, Bob.
Hi. So say, I have a burning bush that's gotten a little out of control. It's probably about 12 foot tall. And wondering if I prune that now, if I trim it down, how much should I take off of that?
I would say take off maybe a third of the plant. That should be no problem at all. I wouldn't give it a haircut, meaning cutting it off at a specific point, but I would prune back branches, maybe to a side branch, maybe the main branch back to a side branch, that type of thing, and kind of reduce the size that way. But take off maybe a third, and let's say it's still too big, then do it again early next spring. Take off another third.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call, Bob. Donovan's up next in Clear Lake. Hi, Donovan.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
I have a flowering crab that has beautiful flowers for about 1 week each spring, and the rest of the season, the leaves are turning yellow and dropping. And I'm trying to decide whether the payoff of 1 week of flowers is worth cleaning up leaves all summer.
Yes, that's a personal decision. the problem there probably is it probably gets apple scab, which is a fungal disease, and it causes spotting of the foliage. The affected leaves turn yellow and they drop off. And apparently you have a variety that's very susceptible. Do you know the variety name?
I'm sorry, I don't know. It's been there for 25 years.
Does it produce fruit?
No.
No fruit. It could be spring snow, which is a very common variety. Spring snow has white flowers in the spring. It's just covered with white flowers.
They're beautiful.
They're beautiful. But it does not bear any fruit. And that's one of its big drawing points is it doesn't have the fruit. The unfortunate thing is spring snow is very susceptible to apple scab. It's notorious for dropping its leaves. And so by mid to late July, you may have this spring snow that's lost maybe 4/5 of the foliage. It's almost naked. Doesn't look very attractive. So the decision is yours as far as replacing it. I will say if we have a dry spring, the disease will be less severe. The tree will lose less foliage than normal. But if we have a wet spring, it's going to lose most of its foliage. So if you do replace it, I would insist on an apple scab resistant variety. There are very many, many varieties, and some good varieties are apple scab resistant. They do not lose leaves.
All right. Donovan, thanks a lot for your call. Shirley is on the line next from Eldora. Hi, Shirley.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, my question is about a maple tree, a red maple, and it has green moss on it quite a bit, up quite a ways. I don't know what's wrong with it. What can I do? I like the tree.
Well, mosses and lichens that grow on the trunks of trees are not a problem whatsoever. They're growing on the surface. They do not harm the tree. We don't have to worry about them. So if the tree is having a problem, it's not due to the mosses or lichens on the trunk.
All right. So you don't have to take care of it. That's excellent news.
Just enjoy them. Actually, they can be kind of pretty.
All right. We have this question from Mark from Twitter. He says, when is a good time to trim a Japanese maple?
I would probably do it now or in the next 2 or 3 weeks before it leaves out. There could be some dieback this year because of the winter. We've had a pretty typical winter cold-wise. So, but I would probably do it in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
And I probably wouldn't take much out on a Japanese maple because they are pretty slow-growing and marginal. So go lightly.
All right. Rick is on the line next from Des Moines. Hi, Rick.
Yeah, I just had a question for you guys. I planted 2 hydrangeas 3 years ago. The first year after planting them, I had blooms on one of them, and the other one didn't bloom at all. And then last year, I didn't get any blooms. And I'm just wondering what to expect this year. It's one of those, do I need a special fertilizer? Or
probably not, but what type are they? Do you know the names?
Yeah, like the standard thing you buy at a greenhouse in the spring. They're in a 1 gallon pot.
Well, when it bloomed, did it have blue or pink flowers or white flowers?
They had the blue ones at first, but then we had white. The second year, the one bloomed white flowers because I'm not adding anything to soil to make it one way or the other. I'm just curious.
Yeah, the key with the hydrangeas is the type that they are, because some hydrangeas bloom on new wood, okay, and some bloom on old wood. And those that bloom on old wood, if they suffer quite a bit of dieback in winter, or if we prune them extensively in the spring, they're not going to bloom, because they bloom on strictly last year's growth. So that's a very important thing.
There's been no pruning involved, because they're only 3 years old and they haven't grown very much. That's been my concern. Is they they're on the north side of the house. Is that a bad?
Ooh. Yeah, probably. Probably. Most of those would prefer probably 4 to 6 hours of sun.
Okay.
There are some that prefer full sun, like 6 hours or more, but most like maybe 4 to 6 hours of sun, and they would prefer maybe an eastern exposure where they get morning sun, afternoon shade. But on the north side, if they're close to a building, they're probably not getting much sun at all as far as direct sun. And usually
that's not... Could I do that right now in the spring as soon as I can dig the ground? Or...
Right. As soon as the ground basically kind of thaws out and gets workable, I would just dig them up and move them to a different site. Yes.
Okay. That's probably what I'll do then.
All right, Rick.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call. And we've got a couple questions from email to close out the hour here. Jennifer sent this email. She says, and from Fairfield, where can I send a living sample of our partially brown dying pine tree to get a disease diagnosis and treatment suggestions?
Okay. What you can do is, if you have a computer, go on to the Iowa State University homepage, and there's a search box in the upper right-hand corner, and type in Plant Diagnostic Clinic. It should go to the clinic site, and once you're there, it has a form that you can basically print out, fill in. It also has the directions on how to do this, and the address, and the cost. It's all on that page.
All right. And next we will, I don't have a name for, Mindy sent this one in. She was listening to the conversation about the purple cone flowers, and she says, I like the mutant flowers. I think they look amazing. Some have mini flowers blooming out of the flower head. Some are half pink, half green. Is it detrimental to allow them to grow?
It can be if you have other plants, because they could get it too, potentially. Aster yellows can affect a number of different annuals and perennials. For example, things like marigolds, I think Monarda, and some other plants too. So potentially it could affect those too, and that's not a good thing. So,
but she can also go and buy some of the more unusual cultivars of coneflower, like Double Decker, that have these kind of weird, unusual flowers. There's even green ones. There's an annual Rubeckia called Green Wizard that's all green petals. So there's a few things out there that she could buy that mimic this or have these kind of unusual flowers
that are
striking, that are normal for it. So she can switch to maybe other alternatives.
All right. And one final question. This is from Derek. I was wondering, when would be the best time to fertilize my lawn with a weed and feed mix?
I would say probably around mid-April.
All right. An easy one. Richard Geron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. Cindy Haynes, thank you.
Thank you.
Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. We'll be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Sarah Bowden, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Technical support today from Alyssa Weiss in Ames. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up Monday on the show, the unusual story of the quack's daughter. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.